You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
Truth seekers, please understand, Mental Dialogue is much more than just a talk show. Each and every Saturday, we communicate with you for two reasons, to dialogue and connect. On the dialogue side, we cater to you intellectual outcasts who feel you have no place for honest discourse on race, sex, culture, and African-American business. On the connect side, we've created a community where you can connect with experts specifically in finance, whether personal or business, and mental health, whether it's trauma or to optimize performance, along with all the other skill sets from other MD community members. Our mission was to create a virtual nationwide neighborhood where African Americans learn to trade ideas, goods and services through social media, meetup, and this podcast. To become a neighbor of the Mental Dialogue Community Club, please visit us at mentaldialogue.com. We are better with you than we are without you. We can be neighbors even though we don't live next to each other. Hashtag raise the culture. I am your host, once again, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, and welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of intelligent radio as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. This is our best of the year 2023 Mental Dialogue Talk Show. If you are out there listening, you can call in and stay on the show with us and help us co-host. But I have a returning guest, none other than attorney Edward C. Hopkins. Thank you, brother, for holding me down for our best of Mental Dialogue 2023. For anybody that saw me promoting my girl Hillary, Queen of Intellect member being on, just to highlight that if you saw the promotions, found out we got some ballet lessons with the daughter, so she won't be able to make it this morning. But we're here for the kids, and we understand, and we'll see her in some future dates. But with that said, I got, again, returning guest, Attorney Hopkins. Ed, if you will, can you let them know who you are? Tell them a little bit about yourself before we get into this best of the Mental Dialogue 2023. Thank you for taking the time to be with us here this morning, brother.
Thank you, brother, for having me. Your show is very important, and I'm happy to be on it again. I'm Edward C. Hopkins, Jr. I'm an attorney. I practice civil rights law. I also practice defamation law, and I have been practicing law for longer than I like to admit sometimes. it seems like it's been a long time, but in reality, it really hasn't. In any event, I don't see myself primarily as a lawyer. I see myself primarily as a Black American man, a husband to a Black American woman, the patriarch of a Black American household, and I'm doing the best I can, as I'm sure many of your listeners are, to thrive and flourish in America. But I enjoy your show, and I am happy to be here to speak with you this morning.
No, I'm glad to have you. I even like you personally pointing out what you consider your first, what you consider yourself first and foremost. Because it's vital, especially for anybody that's a first-time listener. We highlighted that we do the hard conversations or whatever, but at the end of the day, we are here for the upliftment and have hard conversations around our community specifically. We welcome all opinions from all walks of life at the end of the day, but at the end of the day, it is, in a sense, in elevation to our people, because as you can speak to as well, we stand on the shoulders of giants, and we're never going to forget that. And I always say we owe those giants. And I hope that a little bit of what we do with the Mental Dialogue Talk Show basically plant seeds so that people can act and honor those giants correctly, because they sacrifice in ways that we have not always paid attention to, or is not going to be taught correctly in our public education school system. So therefore, it is left to us to ensure that we are, if you will, educating ourselves. Or as I recently dropped the book, earlier this year, re-educating ourselves about ourselves. So that's why we have these conversations. Really wanted to lay that out and thank you, brother, because as I always highlight, you are one of the most brilliant brothers I know, and I love the fact that you were willing to do the best of Mental Dialogue 2023 with me and be able to sit back and react to our best shows. Definitely want to hear your insight as you hear some of the things that we've been doing throughout the year, having these conversations, hoping to lay seeds to our community club, to our virtual nationwide neighborhood, where literally you can pick up ideas, you can connect to people like an attorney Hopkins or any other professionals that are a part of our club. So I definitely appreciate y'all's support. And again, appreciate your time. And I wanted to properly lay out the thank yous and help someone who's maybe a first time listener understand that we are more than just a talk show. Dialogue and connect is what we do best. Ultimately, who can we connect you to progress yourself? So again, thank you, brother. With that said, we're going to let everybody know this is a commercial-free show today. So to all my sponsors, I owe y'all an extra Saturday, no problem. You know, you're still getting your service and goods out to the smartest audience and all the radio. So we got you. But for the best of, we go commercial-free, play our best cuts, and keep it rocking. For any of the listeners out there, we're about to get started. If you decide to call into the show, 646-787-1691. You do have to press 1 if you want to speak. If you decide to call into the show, we'll let you rock out with us. If you got a great 3 cents, we'll let you stay on and co-host until the next person calls and knocks you off. This is something that I do for the best of Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I like to open it up to, again, the smartest audience in all the radio. I call y'all intellectual outcasts. And so definitely get in on the show with us, and y'all can rock out with us as well. With that said, this is our top 7 shows from the year. So we're going to go from 7 to 1 and no commercials. So share the show. Let people know, hey, man, there's this dope podcast. I want y'all to hear it. For anybody that you know that may be into this type of thing, share the show today. So with that said, we're going to play our first cut from our top 7th show of the year, which was called True Love, How Real Is It? We're going to go into this cut. And when we come out, I'm going to ask probably it's going to be his first time hearing, or he may have heard it earlier this year, but you get your reaction, Ed, to this cut. All right, y'all, so rock out with us, get in on the show with us, and we'll be right back. All right, give me one, there we go. True Love, How Real Is It? Our top 7 show for the year.
And we confuse love, the emotion of love, which a lot of us get wrapped up in when we meet someone and we're infatuated with someone, as being the driving force that will lead us to commitment and making it through the difficulties and challenges that will arise in marriage, when in fact it's not the emotion of love, which can be very deceptive for us. It's the action, and actually living love as an action and a choice that you make with a person each and every day. And that is what I think is the disconnect that we have, is getting away from seeing love and connecting that emotional part that, you know, exists and is good to have, but not allowing that to be the foundation, because it's a very, you know, unstable foundation to build anything on.
No, I love, again, just that breakdown. Sincere, I'm going to jump to you, if you will, King. And I think you may have heard me say this before. You know, I go by Black Socrates, consider myself a philosopher, if you will. And one thing that I love to highlight when it comes to this subject matter, and I say it to people just to make them, in a sense, just kind of step back. You know, context and perspective is always the goal on this dialogue or these discussions, if you will. And so the thing that I always say, for as long as humans have been earthed and evolved into, you know, coming together in relationships and, you know, and marriage, if you will, obviously relationships and coming together physically is a natural thing or whatever. That's what living organisms do, if you will. I say, but the thing that we're experiencing currently in 2023, the thing that makes us unique is, in a sense, the latest version of humans. We're the first humans to be raised with movies. You know what I'm
saying?
So we're the first group of humans that's had to deal with romanticized movies in addition to what you, you know, might could read, because before movies, most of the world couldn't read anyway, right? Before public education. So for even the poets and the writers that could, you know, write about love in a romanticized way, hell, most of the people couldn't read it, right? So it's definitely a new age, if you will, King. But your thoughts, again, having written a book yourself, and just that concept of we are the first humans to be raised with movies. You know, how has that kind of mirror, you know, smeared the mirror, if you will?
Yeah, absolutely, man. And that's a powerful point. First off, I want to say peace and love to the awesome women that's on this discussion as well. But, brother, let's jump right on into it. See, a lot of us have romanticized or have put in a box this word love. So we don't have a proper working definition, right? So let's start there. The context of love from a historical sense is based on tribalism, right? So at the lowest level, love is emotionality. It's the thing that connects us humanly. At the highest end, it's God consciousness. Love is the only thing on record as being God, and God is love, which rests right within us. So what's in the middle? What's in the middle are words, their actions, frequency, vibration, and it's the learning mechanism that teaches us what that thing is over a lifespan, right? So that's a great working definition, because as I coach people, most people that I talk to, that I coach studying this word for 20 years, most people don't have a good working definition of the word love.
That's our first cut on the best of mental dialogue from the show. True love, how real is it? You heard cognitive behavior therapist Marilyn Arduini, as well as love relationship coach Sincere, and myself. Brother Ed, first thoughts to hearing that cut from one of our top shows this year?
It could never be more timely than it is right now to talk about love. It's always timely to talk about love. I think love in all of its manifestations, the love that men and women and women and women, men and men, depending upon what your dispositions and tastes are, the ones that we have, the love that we have with one another, that's our raison d'etre. That's the reason why we are here. And what I can't stop thinking about when I listen to that clip is how my wife and I, we constantly talk about our love affair. We've been married longer than a quarter century. And when we think about what our love looks like on a day-to-day basis, we know that it's not what Hollywood depicts, and it's not what you're going to see on TV, but it's the type of love that you can build a nation on. And when we have these kind of conversations in our house about love and how important it is to model it, how important it is to discuss it, to value it, to place nothing above it, we oftentimes wonder whether we talk about it enough in the media, particularly in the black media. I've been trying to encourage my wife for a long time to consider doing a podcast of her own. I think she's getting close to maybe doing it. Nice. And the reason why is not because she wants to be famous. My wife doesn't really care much for fame, but she watches the news, reads the newspapers, and has philosophical conversations with me, like the ones, you know, we have when we were in school.
Absolutely.
And we have these kind of conversations, and we ask ourselves, what should we be doing to help our brothers and sisters out there who might not have grown up in homes where they saw a decades-long love affair between two black folks. And we have that. And ours is working. It's worked for a quarter of a century. I still love my wife more than anything in the world. She's the reason why I get up. And when I think of her, I think of a blessing. I tell people with a straight face more often than you might imagine, brother, that she's my proof that God exists, because I can't imagine. I can't imagine being blessed with something like her unless something else loved me dearly, because she has made my life worth living, and she makes it so easy in our house to love her. And that kind of love affair is the kind of love affair that I hope all of us get to experience, because I do believe that's the purpose of a human existence. But the black love in particular is imperiled, I think. And I think we need to have conversations about it so we all can figure out how we're going to get ourselves some of it and as much of it as we can.
No, absolutely. And that's what we attempt to do. Again, that's why we bring on people like, you know, cognitive behavior therapists that can really speak to, as you heard on that cut, what love is, like you said, versus the romanticized stuff. Love is duty. That's what I'm hearing quite often from those that are in the space who are also like yourself, in successful marriages, a love, you breaking down, your love for your wife. I've known you for a long time, quite honorable to see you get married so many years ago. Even knowing, you know, in a sense, stepped up and made children your own, which is what a man, a husband does. And you highlighted, and I hope that she does decide to get into space so that we can get more of the correct information out here. So I hope she does decide to get into the podcast space. But you mentioned you and her are modeling for, in a sense, your own family, which is your first obligation. And you mentioned that as much as you are known for being an attorney, you're one of the top attorneys in your industry in the entire nation. You highlighted, you know, husband and father first. And I love that, brother, that you do that, and it is who I know you to be. I would like to highlight, if you don't mind speaking on this before we go to another cut, if you will, speaking on modeling, I'm kind of walking back through this thing. I don't know her situation, but you had to figure it out without a model yourself. And so a lot of African-American males in particular, myself included, I'm still wanting to get what you have. I think I'm on the verge of it, just to highlight that real quick, brother. But that aside, how did you figure out how to model? And I know enough of your personal story to realize you had to figure it out on your own. A lot of times in our communities, we are trying to figure it out. We're needing to reach for those straws, if you will. Quite often we're picking the wrong straw. How did you figure it out without having a model per se, if you don't mind speaking to that, brother, before we go to another cut?
I don't mind speaking to it at all. I'm still figuring it out, but I'm working hard at it. And what happened with me is I was raised by a single mother, so I did not see two people loving each other for decades, because you have to do something on a daily basis if you're in love with somebody, building a household with somebody, raising a family with somebody. There's a lot of duties that come with that work, but in addition to all those duties, there is a beauty to that kind of life. And the longer you live it, the more beautiful it is. And that's something that I had to learn in the process, on the job, I should say, because year five is better than year one. Year 10 better than year 5. Year 25 better than year 15. And every year it gets better. It's a deeper understanding of the reason why human beings exist. And but she had the benefit of having two black parents who have been married for 6 decades.
Wow.
I have a father-in-law who's 90, a mother-in-law who's 87, 6 decade, brother. And
wow.
The things that they have done to build their family are things that as I grow older, I admire more. And it's not something that they do to go out in the community and get everyone to say, hey, look at us. They understood because it was modeled for them.
Mm-hmm.
And these chains, this intergenerational change is something that they benefited from, I didn't benefit from. So what I had to do is I had to rely heavily on my in-laws. I had to rely heavily on older men who mentored me, and I had to rely heavily on my wife to teach me. what, in some respects, the role I was supposed to play for our household.
Nice.
And
nice.
So it's been a team effort, and I'm still learning.
No, I love it. And it's dope that she does come from generational marriage. Like when you say, in a sense, the black love is in peril or whatever, jumps me right to the structure of the black family, if you will. And it's not to just simply speak to the negative. It's to have, again, dialogue to hopefully people catch seeds to think about and, you know, maybe have an opportunity to do what you did. Like you understood the assignment. You was like, okay, I didn't have it modeled. And so you, as you just said, I love how you beautifully said, in a sense, she was able to teach you in the process. So there has to be a level of open-mindedness, you know, and me knowing where you come from and having met you, you know, way back in the early 90s, knowing exactly who you were. You know, I used to pick on you for your nickname we had for you or whatever, but you was out of Compton, California. I will bless the listeners with that today. But where you come from, I can say you could have easily been unwilling to allow her to teach you based on being in an area where your macho, if you will, your bravado was almost necessary for your survival. And so me knowing your whole story, it's a beautiful thing to hear you say when I ask you, well, how did you figure it out since you didn't have it modeled? To hear you say, hey, with her, so you were smart enough to, you know, you've always been a smart brother. So that's one thing that you've always had going for yourself. And so you were smart enough to say, okay, let me catch this one right here because she can give me some of the game that I did not see. Because I know for me as a young man, as I pointed out in that cut, we're the first generation of humans that, in a sense, grow up with romanticized movies and romance novels as the norm, if you will, right? Like when you think about human existence possibly being 200,000 years old from the original humans to who we are now, and marriage being on record for 6,000 years up until now, we literally are the first generation to be able to romanticize it. So my first examples, I literally copied the movies into how I wanted to romanticize and romance someone. You, on the other hand, found an amazing woman and was willing to, and I keep reiterating this, learn from her great example of generational marriage. That was dope, but again, highlighting you came from an area where you easily could have rejected that. So if you don't mind, brother, speak on that aspect, because I think a lot of men are in that situation. They're having to hold the frame for how they learn to be a man, and that ain't always beneficial to a family. How did you navigate that part in particular, if you don't mind?
I had limited resources as a young man. I relied heavily, and I don't have any problems admitting this publicly. I relied heavily, maybe too heavily, on the Huxtables. And the Huxtables wasn't the very best way to learn how to be a black father, a black husband, but it was the best way available to me. And when I watched that show, what I saw is I saw a black father, a professional, respecting his wife. His wife was never called out of her name on that show. His wife wasn't confined to the kitchen. She had her own ambitions, and he supported them fully. His wife was a disciplinarian when she needed to be. She was also loving when she needed to be. Not only did she discipline their children, she disciplined him when he needed it, and he returned the favor. However, it was clear for anyone who watched that show that she was the boss of that house. She was the wiser of the two characters, Claire Huxtable. But when I tried to figure out what I wanted for myself out of a family, the Huxtables is what I relied on. So I had friends who had parents who also modeled it for me, but my exposure to them was too limited. I did not have an opportunity, for instance, to see what it's like for a black family getting up every day, getting the kids off to school, conversations about how we're going to take care of these babies for the next two decades when they arrive, conversations about planning for their future, about making sure that they live the best versions of themselves that they can live, making it a part of life's great pleasure to see your progeny thrive. And I didn't know the tactics I would need to employ to do it. So I had to learn those tactics along the way. And sometimes I do wish I were wiser faster, even though I don't think I was an awful father. I certainly wasn't the version of a father I would be if I had to do it all over again starting now, because I'm wiser. And I think that the three things that I really, really would advise folks who are in my situation, men in particular, who grow up in either single mother households or they grow up in homes where there's a lot of anger in the house, a lot of worry and stress in the house. I think that the three things I would advise everybody to think about is that anger, that stress, that's not in every house. There are ways to have a household, no matter how much money you have. There are ways to have a beautiful household, and it requires wisdom on behalf of both of the heads of household. That wisdom takes time to gather, and you got to be patient. But I think that the three things that I would tell people is that, you know what, hang out with some folks who have been married for a couple of decades.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to them about what they value, and the more you build a relationship with them, the more honest that they'll be with you.
Yes.
They'll get past the superficial conversation. They'll get past the proverbs, and they'll get past all of the wise sayings, and they'll get to the nitty-gritty. And you can talk about the business of managing a household together for decades. So get to know people who have done it successfully. And what I mean by successfully, not necessarily financially, but they stayed together for decades, and everybody seems happy when you see them on the holidays. That kind of thing is a special thing to achieve in America if you're black. And it's trickier than a lot of people realize, but it's also very simple. You just need to know some basic rules, and it takes time to figure them out. So hang out with folks who know those rules. The other thing is that you need to, I believe, in order to be successful in any long-term relationship, including marriages, including parenting, you need to know yourself. And knowing yourself is a lifelong project.
Yes.
It's easier to know yourself if you do things like read and write often. I'm a big proponent of reading, as you know. I also write daily for the exercise. It helps me organize my thoughts. It helps me interpret how I'm perceiving the world. And I put it down in paper, digital paper, so that I can process myself on a daily basis, which enables me to interact with everybody in a more authentic way, helps me figure out how I want to be and how I want to be perceived by the people I care about, and I go to work on it. And then third, you got to really learn how to be the opposite of selfish. I don't have a good word for the opposite of selfish. I just know that the concept of selfishness, the me-first mentality, that kind of mentality destroys relationships. That's the opposite of friendship. It's the opposite of love. Love is I am thinking about how I'm going to improve his or her life. That is my endeavor here. And when I love someone, the quality of their life takes precedent. I do not try to harm myself in the process of helping others.
Right.
And normally that's not something I need to do. But
right.
I do focus on, and I believe you have to focus on to have a good long-term relationship of any kind, including the marriage. You have to focus on making the other person's life better. If you don't focus on that, you're not going into it with the right mindset, and you're not going to have the best chance of success. So those are the three things that I have learned are very important to focus on with marriage and with any kind of true long friendship.
Hey, I love it, man. You said so much I really want to jump in on, but we got a caller that wants to jump in. For the callers out there, you do have to press 1 to get on this thing. I got area code 301, last 3697. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion thus far.
Hi, this is Marilyn Ogling, and I'm just calling in to just say that I agree 100% with what has been said, and I think I meant to chime in a little bit earlier, but I was making breakfast with my family, and I just wanted to thank you for, you know, allowing me to have the space to share on your show.
No, absolutely, Queen. You have always been amazing when it comes to particularly this issue. I think Ed, my special guest, would agree. What you do, the work to help families, is foundational for our community. People are chasing it every day via the internet, via the movies, and we get to the actual nitty-gritty. And so I just appreciate your support. You are a member of the Mr. Dollar Community Club, so I thank you for that. And I really thank you for just the information that you're able to provide and help people with. By the way, again, I highlighted that she is a cognitive behavioral therapist, so thank you, Marilyn, for calling in. But if you need help, real quick, because I know you got your family, and thank you for calling in again this year, because you made the top 7 shows last year and you made it again this year. So shout out to you and thank you for that. But if you will, I want people to follow you, and I'll let you get back to your family. So if you will, real brief, let people know how they can stay in contact. I'm going to this sister to counsel me as I move and look to move into having a family of my own. But if you will, Queen, let them know how they can stay in contact with you, because you are amazing. Thank you, Queen, for calling in as well.
Absolutely. I appreciate, you know, everything you do and always being welcome to be a part of your space. I can be found online as a Peaceful Black Mama. My name is Marilyn Odueni, last name O-D-U-E-N-Y-I, everywhere on social media. So either the Peaceful Black Mama or Marilyn Odueni. And you can also reach me via email. I'm on a bit of a hiatus in terms of the public space right now, so I get all my work through word of mouth or just shows like this at this point. So thepeacefulblackmama@gmail.com, I can be reached there as well. And I'm, you know, always here to help and support.
No, absolutely. Thank you. I'll be calling you soon, because I do need you, and I don't mind making that loud and clear on the air, because you are very good at what you do. So thank you, Queen, for getting in with us this morning.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, y'all. Man, you said a mouthful, Brother Ed. I wish I could jump in on it, but we got more cuts. It's only the first one, so let's keep this thing rolling. This next cut is a little long or whatever. For the callers out there, if you want to jump in, you can actually co-host with us. Again, thank Marilyn for jumping in, as she was the catalyst for the last show, if you will, the last cut. This comes from number 6 show of the year, Should We Teach Black Youth It's Okay to Be Arrested? All right, let's go right into it, y'all. But Brother William House, he responded to me putting this question out this week. It says, should we teach black youth it's okay to be arrested? And he gave this quick response, and I wanted to give my thoughts and hear both of your thoughts as well to this. So his response was, no, I am teaching my boys not to do anything that will get them arrested. That means watch where you go, watch who is with you, keep your head on the swivel for situations that can go bad. So I would highlight, I disagree with this 100%. I disagree with it 100% because what he's teaching has his children, in my opinion, his boys, and they're brilliant young brothers, just to highlight that I know of them because I know this brother. But I disagree 100% because his boys will be least prepared in the event that, one, they are mistaken identity and then therefore are arrested via mistaken identity. And so if the only training that is had during the talk is here's how you act not to get arrested, then they have, again, this is a short response. He may have this other talk, but just based on the response, if you're teaching them, you know, no, it's not okay to be arrested and do things not to get arrested, what are you teaching them in the event that they are arrested via mistaken identity? And so, in my opinion, the conversations and the stuff that Attorney Davis has brought to the table, I hope some of the things that I'm bringing to the table are lessons that still have to be taught, and I will add, you can't just teach don't do things not to get arrested. I make sure my, you know, if I had a son or a daughter or the children that I mentor, I make sure they know you got somebody coming to get you. That is the coming when you are in a situation where you know you are innocent, and it is human nature to
convey to the officer, you got the wrong person, or I am innocent, or I don't know why I'm being arrested. While that is quite normal, it is a human reaction that you should be allowed to have. Again, if you haven't heard the first hour, I do want to be clear that although I am advocating be compliant, it is not simply just to do what the hell they say. It is a bigger context at play here, and the most common thing that you can do for your child or your daughter, even as they become an adult, is to know that although this situation is going awry, although I know I'm completely innocent, I have been told by my parents they got me whether I did it or not. That's where the common sense that Emil spoke to can come in. And so if you will, Emil, I'm bringing you back live. But that's my response to one of my good friends. I think it is a disservice to just simply teach, don't do things to get arrested, because those are the people that usually have the worst response. People that messing around in criminal activity almost sometimes know how to act with the police because they done it too many times, right? But it's when you've never been in the situation that I think his children are at risk, just to teach, don't get arrested. Your thoughts, King?
Yes, I agree with that. I think
I'm asking Emil to jump in real quick, because I'm gonna let him go.
Oh, my bad. Go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead, Emil.
Yeah, no, I'm black in America, so I understand that it doesn't matter if I'm innocent or guilty. It doesn't matter that if I'm in the right place at the right time, wrong place, wrong time, wrong place, right time, or right place, wrong time. None of that's relevant. What's relevant is, as a black person in America, I am always a suspect. It doesn't matter if I drive a Mercedes in a nice neighborhood or a hoopty in a rough neighborhood, I'm always a suspect. I do not like that reality. It makes my nation and my home hostile to me. But the reality is that I'm always a suspect, no matter how well I dress, no matter how well I speak, no matter my education. I always go back to what Malcolm X said. What do they call a black PhD? And when we know the answer to that question, we understand that it's not about our status, our situational awareness, our ability to recognize danger signals and perhaps avoid a situation where it's likely that something involving the police may happen. I had teenage children. They went to house parties. They knew when to leave. It didn't matter. So what matters is you are in America, you are black, and you are going to have to face one time in your life the possibility of being wrongfully arrested. So how do you deal with that? De-escalate the situation. And if you don't tell your children and teach them how to stay calm in a moment where danger is a possibility, they will panic. And the answer is everybody who has a child in America who's black needs to say, this is what happens when you get arrested. De-escalate the situation, take the punishment, and what did you say, Montoya? I got you.
That's the most affirming thing. And I want my child to know, even if they didn't mess around and not took my values, and they didn't mess around and did something and they wrong. Shirley Davis pointed this out in the last hour. Take the charge. Take the charge. And I beautifully had one of my former co-hosts call in and said this. I thought this was a beautiful challenge just to think about it in a deeper way. She actually said, are you saying take the charge? Because it's financially to your benefit as a lawyer to get the case. And he was like, hey, I don't even do criminal cases. I'm telling you this out of the love of our people. Take the charge. And he's saying that to young men that he mentors weekly in the event that they riding dirty, they actually did it. And he's like, don't volunteer no information. Don't get caught in the sense of if you don't have to volunteer information and you're not searched. But in the event that you are, don't react in a way. Take the charge. We got you. We got you. And so I know, if I can't say this to Don, I'm going to let Emil go, that in the event that, again, you are only stuck with a court-appointed lawyer, we both know that is not the best situation to be in. If you can pay to play, it obviously gives you a more fair shot in this unfortunate system. But in the event that you have to take that court-appointed lawyer, that is still the way to go. Tell your children it is okay. I disagree with him telling his children, no, it is not okay. I get why he's saying it, because he wants them to act in a way where they never should and could be arrested. That is what we all wish for our children. However, as Emil just pointed out, it doesn't mean you could not be wrong place, wrong time. And if that situation happens, have you given your child the game of how to respond? Thank you.
Brother Ed, this is your area of expertise. What's your first thoughts in hearing that cut? I do have a caller that wants to jump on as well, but I want to get your thoughts first.
Brother, we could spend the rest of the time on your show going into great detail about this topic. It's something near and dear to me. It is the reason why I practice the area of law I practice, because it is a dangerous nation for black people when it comes to encounters with the police. I'm not saying it because I have issues with an individual police officer or issues with any individual police office. I'm saying it because I do this. I represent families whose sons were shot and killed, officer-involved shootings. I watch the body cam. I have seen what happens before the guns come out and the bullets start flying, and I know how quickly something can go from a misunderstanding to death. And it is very important that everybody understand a couple of fundamentals when they think this through. When a police officer in the United States stops you and you are black, if that police officer is not black, there are some cultural differences between the two people that are difficult to figure out quickly. The way that police officer perceives you and the way you perceive that police officer due to how America has racialized us, there is room for confusion. Confusion about what a body movement means. Confusion about what a tone of voice means. Confusion about what a failure to comply is. And if you do not understand the person's culture who has the gun, you are imperiled if you do not comply. And I have seen things escalate so quickly, Brother Death. I watched one video, man, of this young black man who got pulled over driving his mother's car in a nice neighborhood. The young man, 18 years old, he did not have any reason to believe that he was doing anything wrong. But the police pulled him over because part of the license plate on the car matched the license plate of a car that had been reported stolen. Part, not all. And they pulled the young man over, and the police made up their mind before they pulled him over about his guilt. Mm-hmm. They seen a black man with a passenger who was also black in a nice neighborhood in a nice car. They presumed, because of their cultural training, that this was their guy. In fact, this police officer in this particular case didn't even verify the license plate. Wow. And when they yanked this young man out of the car, he was so terrified, Smitty. This young man was shaking uncontrollably. I feared while watching the body cam that he might have a heart attack. I don't know if you've ever been so frightened that you were about to die, that you couldn't control your body. But the young man was shaking. And that is, unfortunately, common for black young men in America. So my advice when I talk with folks about this, and we discuss this difficult question, and I discuss it often, I recently published an article for my fraternity's journal about it with another one of my fraternity brothers. My advice is this. Don't think about the encounter as an encounter about your manhood. Think about the encounter as an encounter about your ability to go home.
Yes.
Think about your mother, your father, if they're alive. They're going to want to see you at Christmas. If you make a mistake in that encounter because you don't have the gun, it could be your last mistake. So this is the worst time to be prideful. This is the best time to comply, because it is not about pride. It's not about respect. It's about life. And it's a dangerous encounter every single time. And brothers, unfortunately, we have to take the responsibility to de-escalate, because police officers don't do the job as they should, and that is one of the reasons why we have a lot of officer-involved shootings for Black Americans. We are involved in more officer-involved shootings than our peers, percentage-wise. And it's because of this cultural dissonance. It's because of our desire not to be checked by the police, but it's also because the police have the force. They have the weapon. They have the power in that interaction. And you need to comply with it until it is done and then deal with them later by calling a civil rights attorney like me if they did something unlawful to you during the interaction. But you definitely don't want to treat it like it's the time to buck up, because bucking up will get you killed in the United States.
And what we're not saying, if you're listening right now, what we're not saying is that this is okay, that it's this way. That's not what we're saying. What we are saying is, as parents, tell your children you're coming to get them. Do not buck up. And we're not blaming us for bucking up. Do not hear anything we're saying as such, but you're hearing it from someone directly in the field who, and I brought attorney Wally Davis on for the cut that you just heard. He's like the top civil rights lawyer here, and he was saying the same things. So we are talking about the reality. We as citizens should not be in the space of de-escalating. That's what the police are trained to do. So I want to make it real clear that we understand that that's not how it should be. However, we're telling you the reality, and as parents, tell your children you're coming to get them whether they did it or not. That's the most reassuring you can add to the talk, beyond keep your hands on the steering wheel, beyond tell the officer you're reaching. You can have that talk, but if you don't add, and even if it goes awry, I got you. Because there are children, sometimes the bucking is simply they're thinking, my mama's going to kill me if I get arrested. I didn't do this. And that thought alone, that my parents are going to kill me, will have your child, not intentionally, but just trying to let the officer know, this ain't right, this ain't right. And all the child is worried about is, what my parents going to do if I get arrested? Because we haven't taught our children, and Black children need to be taught, it's okay, because I got you. I got you. All right, let's jump to this caller before I play another cut real quick, brother. Like you said, we could do a whole show on it. We did it that time, and I was so proud that the civil rights attorney, Mawali Davis, came on that show and laid out pretty much the same thing you're saying. And I want to keep reiterating it because I know there are plenty of Black parents who've never put in perspective. Right or wrong ain't the issue. Reality is the issue here. All right, area code 478, last 3303. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this Best of Mr. Dialogue 2023. Thanks for calling in.
Peace and love, family. It's Sincere calling out of Atlanta. What's happening, family? Everything good?
Oh, brother, yes.
What's up,
brother? We played a cut from you earlier when you was on with Marilyn early. I don't know if you caught that, but again, I know you can get in, even in on this topic, because you mentor black boys specifically in this area. So wherever you want to jump in, man, thanks for the call. I know you're a busy brother, but let's get your 3 cents in here. Thanks for calling in, King.
Absolutely, absolutely, brother. I appreciate the opportunity, man, and I want to give you your flowers for your consistency, brother. Yeah, actually, I'm on my way to go work with young Black boys and Black men as we speak. So one of the things that I talk to them about in this regard is the fact that some of our greatest leaders in our history have rap sheets and mugshots, right? So
yeah.
So it's about understanding that the responsibility when you get pulled over is for your family to make it to you. Right? That's the responsibility. So we have to use our intellect in that space, not to stop a thing from happening as it's going on. We know the reality of what it is to be a Black man or a Black woman, not only in this country, but in the world, period. So that's where we use our divine intellect to handle the situation appropriately. We can't win in the streets. We're not going to win an argument. We're not going to win a tussle. We're not going to win the gunfight, because there's an institution that's backing that individual, and we have to be smart enough to know that, right? Regardless of the right or wrong, this is an intellect thing with realizing the reality and the times that we're in, right? So we have to address this type of thing in the way that's necessary, not only for our survival, but to get to a space to where we're thriving using the information that's in front of us. So I appreciate this conversation, brother. I appreciate this cut. I wasn't able to make the show, but I definitely wanted to contribute to it, brother. Beautiful conversation.
Nah, thank you, King. And then just to highlight from the simplest standpoint, again, as much as we're speaking to this reality of this issue when it comes to our black children, if you will, our black youth, I do want to even just put this context, hopefully as just a little bit of calm. And at the end of the day, that's what the courtroom is for, is to argue your innocence in the event that they get it wrong on the spot. The police engaged. They're not lawyers like a brother attorney Hopkins here. So they don't always get it right from their viewpoint. But I want to say this just to simplify. Our ancestors have got it to where we can get in that courtroom and it go our way, because our ancestors didn't have that as an option quite often. So I want to, one, give our ancestors for, in a sense, fighting for our equal protection of the law. There are still issues with it systemically. That's why Ed does the work that he does. But it is much better for us because our ancestors fought to where you actually could get your day in court and actually be heard, because that was not the case for them. So I do want to highlight that at the end of the day, if you don't teach your children it's okay to be arrested, they will try to attempt to have court on the side of the road with the policeman, and the policeman knows that's not the place for it. We also should know it's not the place for it, and we should be okay with that and go into the system and have our parents call a Ed Hopkins and get it right if something went wrong. And even if your child did something wrong, you as a parent would much rather them take the charge, as I mentioned earlier, than try to create an issue and get out of it on the side of the road where it could go completely awry. I just wanted to reiterate that before we played the cut. Thank you, Brother Sincere, for the call in. Let's play another cut and keep this show rolling. You'll have a little fun here. This comes from our top, this is number five, our fifth show of the year. It comes from Good Relationships, Bad Sex, Can We Fix It? Let's jump into this cut. If anybody wants to get in, press 1 for the callers out there listening. Y'all can get on the show with us. If you're online, the number again is 646-787-1691. Again, you have to press 1 to speak to us live. We'll be right back. Screen.
Yes, yes. I'm definitely pro-toys. I think toys are a great enhancement, as Ashley mentioned, solo as well as with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I've always done is use toys as an introduction sometimes before I even have physical connection with someone. Ashley, I know you know, you're probably familiar with this one very well, the remote toys, right? Where before I even get intimate physically with you, we might have a day where we're hanging out together and we have the toy and you have the remote. And that's a really good way to introduce it to someone who's really shy to toys, especially a male partner, and think that toys are going to take over. It's almost like having a remote control car when you're a kid, Latoya, where you just pressing that little button all day and she's like jumping.
You just assume I don't know what you're talking about, so you're going to have to go into details, right? You just assume I don't know what you're talking
about. I was just bringing you into the
Hold on, Queen. I don't know what you're talking about, so please explain.
Okay, I'm sorry. You know, it's a habit for me to talk to my brothers. Right?
I just mentioned to you how you just went right into my toy. Let me explain this thing to you. Because you was like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. So go ahead. I just had to call you out for busting me out.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that.
I ain't never heard of this shit. Go ahead,
dude. I didn't mean it like that. But I'm sorry. But, you know, having toys and playing with it throughout the day was one of the best sexual experiences I had with my partners. Is that they were able to play with that little remote all day and see how I responded, and then they got aroused throughout the day. So by the time we did go back to the dinner room, we just had an amazing time. So I am so pro toy that I think everybody should have a toy in their collection somewhere. Honestly,
I'm
gonna be quiet now.
Throughout the day, now you keep talking with stuff like that. I'm my mind going crazy right now. Boy, I need a situation shift.
See,
real fast.
I got you.
Man, I never thought of that. Playing with it all day. Tennessee, what you think about this craziness? Play with the toy all day. See how I react.
All day.
I think the most fun thing to do with that, what she just explained, because I've seen it this play before,
it's like you and your lady going to like you take kids with her to a restaurant or a festival.
You already know about this stuff, dude. You making me look bad. Okay. No, I'm the only one on here that don't know about this stuff.
Serious. You know, it must be, you make it fun, and this is a good fun way to make it, you know. She's walking and she's not expecting it, and you just hit the remote and she literally has to bend or laugh or, you know, because it's just that tickling and it's just that pleasure.
Yes.
I am pro-toys as well, and what men got to realize too, if you're doing what you're supposed to do, toys aren't going to replace you. And there are several toys out there now for men. I mean, one of the more popular ones is the flashlight. And so, you know, joining with women when they're using their toys, or, you know, you can assist her, and it's fun.
Man, what is this world coming to? Y'all got all these flashlights and remotes and stuff. What happened to dildos? What's the other one? The butterfly or something? I can't remember them. Y'all got all kind of stuff out here now, boy. I don't know what's going on.
Kind of stuff out there for men too.
Oh my gosh, those are the best.
I'm like Ricky Smiley. We don't need all that stuff. You just got me. Now let's.
Welcome back to the Best of Mental Dialogue 2023. Like to highlight Angela Connor. She's our sexual expert that we bring on anytime we do the hard conversations on sex, if you will. And that show is called Good Relationship, Bad Sex, Can We Fix It? And I'd like to highlight that cut on our YouTube page as the first cut that I would say this ever went viral. We've had over 62,000 people listen to that particular cut. So they love what Angela had to say. She's also one of our Black Level members in that cut. Again, having a good time. It is our fifth most listened to show of 2023. Brother Ed, hearing that cut for the first time, I would assume, or you may have caught it earlier this year. But either way, give us your 3 cents on what you heard, brother.
Brother, I'm glad you had that conversation. We need to have this conversation more. I agree with the folks who were talking about it that, you know, we need to see this as a manifestation of having fun, with people we care about, having fun with ourselves if that's what we want to do. The way I see it is that there are two big problems with our nation. One is racism. The other one is sexual repression. So there's so much repression, so much guilt tripping when it comes to sexuality, so much judgment. And it really does deter people from the core purpose, the stated core purpose of the United States, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. You can't do those three things without being liberated sexually. And it doesn't mean that you got to put that in everybody's face, that you got to encourage everybody to do it the way you want to do it. What it does mean is you got to feel good about how you're doing it. You got to feel good about what you like. You got to feel good about whom you're doing it with. That's it. I understand why people, particularly parents, are cautious about being too open and sexual at times because they don't want the bad consequences of having a lot of sex in a lot of different ways while not having the wisdom to understand the power of the human body. Babies that weren't anticipated can become issues, diseases, all those types of things. But you know what? It's so important that people grow up in America not feeling guilty for how they feel sexually. It's so important to their ability to thrive that we have to overcome the fear of them being sexual too young, and we have to have those conversations, is my opinion. I believe that sexual repression is a huge problem, that we need to talk about it, make everybody more comfortable with their desires, and let people just have some fun while they're here. rather than feeling like they're being judged all the time. Those are my core thoughts on that. So we need to have more conversations like that. I suspect the reason why it was so popular is because so many people are so frustrated at how secretive, how little people want to have serious conversations about it and enjoy the conversations, laugh and joke. We should be able to do that, and we need to work more and help each other feel comfortable talking about it.
And that's why we had a conversation. So again, we do hard conversations on race, sex, and culture. That's exactly why we do the conversation. And I think you would understand this as well. And especially, like you said, in the United States, a lot of countries, in a sense, are more open with their youth. And it's that openness that makes it more comfortable. And it's not seen as this thing that needs to be hidden. And so because it's hidden is how we end up experiencing sex in a trauma-based way quite often, because of how it's treated and creates that sexual oppression, just because we, make it so negative. We even, just to highlight this real quickly, we're going to go to another cut. But I remember one show where one of the callers called in and we were talking about, I think, sex and marriage or something. I don't think it was this particular show. It may have been on the same show, but they called in and they were just highlighting that the way we learn about sex in America, that even getting into a marriage for a young lady, it's been told it was such a negative thing and you got to stay away from it and don't get pregnant, that when they show up in the marriage, they still don't have a good thought about sex and they married now, because of what they heard all their lives. So to your point, and you're probably right, that is probably why that's the clip that went viral, for what we do over here at Mental Dialogue, because we're not having necessarily the popular and celebrity conversations that you're seeing online. We're here with a purpose to dialogue and connect. And I think you're absolutely right, Ed. That's why it did go, why it was so popular. All right, let's go to our next cut. If you want to get in, 646-787-1691. For the callers that are online listening, if you want to get in, you have to press 1. If you're just enjoying it via the phone, no problem. All right, let's keep it moving.
And so 2020, after me really going through, like, one of my most pivotal awakenings, I would say, you know, really, 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 I feel like that was when I really unplugged myself. I ended up writing a book to really highlight my journey. My book is called The Journey of Unbecoming, A Guide to Living Authentically, and it's really about us becoming aware of the programming we have received, you know, knowing how to work through the traumas that we have gone through, and really knowing how to tap into who we truly are, because we don't have to really try to become anything. We're already it. And I came to the realization that this journey is really more about me remembering who I am and the gifts I came into this realm with, as opposed to me trying to become something or be something. It's like I'm already that. And so, you know, I released my book in 2020, and then at the same time, I just being in the space of holistic health and wellness, really started doing a lot of research around plant medicine. So cannabis was what I was mainly researching, starting like 2018, and really just the way we kind of have been brainwashed and the propaganda that was created around cannabis to make it seem as though it's a drug, but in my mindset, it's sacred medicine. And so I ended up starting a CBD business in 2020 as well, and the business took off. So did the book. And I had a lot of people just coming to me asking me for guidance on, you know, how to start an online business. And so I started mentoring people in that space, and I still do to this day. I coach people in the space of online business, and then I also do holistic life coaching for women where, you know, we focus on mental, physical, spiritual, and financial health. But knowing how to create a business around something you love and have passion for, I feel like that is really like a survival skill in my mind. Like, you knowing how to create something of your own. And, you know, with the time and space we live in now, we have access to so much that gives us the freedom to do that. So with me having a skill set that allowed me to say, you know what, sorry for that background noise, you know what, I'm in a position where I can work anywhere. I can live anywhere in the world I desire to live. As long as I have a Wi-Fi connection, I'm good. I run my business primarily from my phone. You know, and it also gave me the opportunity to get out of the mindset of having to work all the time. You know, I don't work hard. I, work hard on myself, as mentioned before, you know, that's the real work I'm doing is my inner work. I'm healing. I'm ascending. I'm tapping in with the cosmos. That's my work. But in terms of working for money, that was a big part of me moving here, too. I'm like, yeah, I have to fully unlearn grind culture. And I used to be so hard on myself. I got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I got to put this many hours in. Just really, I was in an entrepreneurial grind. A lot of people are in the rat race of a 9-to-5, but there's also a rat race associated with entrepreneurship as well. And I had to unlearn that, and I realized that that's not healthy either, even if you are working for yourself. So like, you always got to be working. So I'm like, I'm relaxing into my desires. I feel like as long as I'm in alignment with my highest self, everything is going to always work out in my favor. But definitely having that skill set and knowing how to run a business online, it's a skill set that gives you ultimate freedom. You know how you're making passive income, you know, you can make money while you sleep, and then you're also able to reach people all over the planet. I work with women all over the world, have worked with clients from all over the world, and I'm not tied to one location. So, you know, when it came to me making the decision to move to Mexico, and this is one of the biggest things since I've been here, you know, a lot of people reach out to me. I want to do it. How did you do it? The biggest hang-up is money. The fear around, you know, I can't leave my job, or what am I going to do to make money? So I did recently host a free workshop. Like, listen, the best thing you can do is learn how to start your own business, because that way you are in control of your revenue. You're not solely dependent on an employer who can literally switch up on you at any time. You can be fired. You can be laid off. Your position can be eliminated. You never know. And in my opinion, a job is never going to pay you your true worth, even if you're making six figures. That's what they think you're worth. That's not your true worth or the true value that you're bringing. So I'm really big on teaching people, even if they don't desire full-time entrepreneurship, you need to at least know how to start a business of your own so you have that freedom and flexibility and control over your own life.
Now, I love you breaking all of that down. I wanted people to hear that. Let me add one quick caveat just because I would love to hear. I'm pretty sure everything you just said is music to Dr. G's ears, if you will. But I also like to just add it.
You just heard Keeba Richardson, amazing queen who's moved to Mexico some years ago, taught her son how to start his own business. He's doing very well himself. So that was something that was highlighted on that show. But Brother Ed, if you will, anything that stood out in that cut for you, if you will, for anybody out there listening, my special guest is Attorney Edward C. Hopkins, just holding me down for this Best of Mental Dialogue for anybody that may have just tuned in for the second hour. Again, I am Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. But what's your 3 cents on that one, Brother Ed? Anything that stood out for you?
So many beautiful things in that clip. It's difficult to just focus on one, but I'm going to come at it from an angle that you might not expect. What she's talking about, the way I hear what she's saying, she's talking about the blessing of autonomy, of being able to do what you want to do with yourself in the world as much as you can. And if you live in the United States, if you live in Western civilization, you got to have money, usually, to be autonomous. Because if you don't have some money, you're not going to have the quality of life that you want while you're enjoying your autonomy. If we all were willing to be autonomous and homeless, many of us would make that choice, because the freedom to do what you want to do with every hour of the day is what we all want. That is what we think of when we think about liberty. But in order to get that kind of autonomy and have the type of quality of life that most of us want, you do need to have some money. So those who figure out, like I did and like she did, how to build businesses that can generate, that can fund the life that you want, we tend to have opportunities to live the freest versions of ourselves. We get to fully appreciate and fully understand ourselves because we do not confine ourselves to a job. We don't have to worry every day in and day out about bills. But I don't want to communicate to anybody that those who choose to be employees for decades are making a bad decision. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that what she's arguing for to me is autonomy, expanding it, increasing it, getting as much of it as you can while at the same time living comfortably, being at peace, having a peaceful home, having peace of mind. And entrepreneurship, I can attest, is the most effective way to achieve it. And I wish more people would take the leap and become entrepreneurs, either part-time or full-time, because I mentor many of them, and I also mentor many career executives, lawyers, investment bankers. I can tell you that the entrepreneurs, they work hard, but they also enjoy a level of autonomy that I believe makes their lives a little bit more pleasurable for them than it would have been had they worked just as hard for an employer for the same amount of time. So I think she's sending the right kind of message, and I encourage people to look into their entrepreneurship and try to figure out a way to make it a part of their life.
Yes, an opportunity to work hard, play hard, statement that we hear all the time, but I think to a degree, if I could simplify what you just mentioned in the difference between, like you said, those you coach that, in a sense, stay in a career path, which, again, we are not beseeching whatsoever. The reality is even full-time entrepreneurship, I always like to make very clear, because we do some shows specifically on entrepreneurship on this show as well, but I always like to specifically highlight full-time entrepreneurship. That is a unique skill and is not for everybody. However, being a part-time entrepreneur, which many of us can and should be, to add to some of your own control, not being completely reliant on someone else, even if it is a quote-unquote good-paying job. But that's what is, at the minimum, the encouragement is, not only just having something for your own, but the freedom that having that extra income based on you being able to build something that brings it in, then that gives you just a little more freedom. And I think people understand that or whatever, but there definitely typically are a lot of fears in taking that leap. Numbers-wise, for those who don't know, and or maybe first-time listeners, I like to give y'all information because I love looking up a bunch of numbers and stats or whatever. But really, without putting in perspective, the entire country, only about 14 to 20% of the country plays around in the entrepreneur space. Only 11% of the country is full-time entrepreneurs or whatever. So again, full-time entrepreneurship is a unique skill set. It is not for everyone, but definitely would love to see, to Ed and Kiva's point, more people move into the part-time space to get some of that autonomy. And success can simply be getting paid for doing what you love. And that's how Brother Nipsey Hussle says it, and I agree with that. If you get paid for doing what you love, you've reached a decent amount of success or whatever. But at the end of the day, work does reap benefits. It's just who are you working for? And again, nothing wrong with working for someone else. The majority of the country does. But if you don't have any autonomy, you definitely should consider the leap, if you will. Again, for the callers out there, if you want to jump in, please press 1. Or 646-787-1691. We'll let you hang out on the show with us if you give us a good 3 cents. All right, we'll go ahead and jump into our next cut. Actually, I forgot to give y'all the name of the last cut we just played. It came from my show that was labeled Mental Health, Can I Unplug to Find Myself? So just as a reminder, if you're not catching us live or want to recommend the show, like right now, if you're loving what you're hearing, make sure you're sharing the link with your friends if you're listening via the link. But keep in mind, you can hear replays on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Last year, we actually got added to iHeartRadio for replays. Live is right here on Blog Talk Radio. It's where you can jump in and give us your 3 cents. Again, my audience makes the show. Some of those cuts are actually people that called the show, and I was like, oh, let me learn more about you, and then I bring them on the show as a guest, because we are a family-oriented show, and our ultimate goal before I play this next cut is to dialogue and connect. And so that very show you just heard, Mental Health, Can I Unplug to Find Myself, included Kiba Richardson, as well as one of our Black level members, Dr. Gerald Hassel, or we call him Dr. G. Both of them were putting on retreats. She was putting on one in Mexico, some part of Mexico for women, and he was putting, they're actually upcoming, I should say.
and he has one coming up in February where for men. And I want to highlight Dialogue and Connect when I say that's what we do best. Our first international connection happened via this community club, via this show. I got them connected on the show. They both moved out of the States to Mexico. I connected them together, so y'all should know each other. Eventually had them on the show. So we made the connection, and come to find out, 2 weeks later, I found out her son got a scholarship to a free retreat to Mexico based on that connection. Dialogue and Connect is what we do best. Our mission is to create a nationwide virtual neighborhood where African Americans learn to trade ideas, goods, and services through live meetups like the Mental Dialogue Live Experience, this podcast, Mental Dialogue, and via social media. Our goal is for you to do business with each other. So as much as you enjoy these conversations, that ain't the real reason we're here. It's for you to connect. And so I wanted to highlight our first international connection came out of that show. We got plenty around the country. We're not just here in Atlanta, but that was our first one outside of the country. So Dialogue and Connect is what we do best. Let's go into our next cut. And this comes from the show, Who Taught You How to Be Broke? Featuring Devette Jones.
They probably needed it. It probably would have made things different for you. And so life insurance, again, is not optional for us. Like, we cannot afford to not have life insurance in our community because we're all going to pass away. That's something that's going to happen for every single one of us. And so having those things in place makes sure that people aren't worried or stressed out about things in addition to mourning you, right? Like, this is something that's happening in the process of you grieving and trying to plan the funeral and trying to get things sorted out. Why would you even want to worry about your money in that time? Yeah.
I love it. I mean, the thing that pops in my head is that old saying when I used to hear it all the time when I was young. All I got to do is stay black and die. Like you say, we go now. You know what I got to do is stay black and die. Now, my little smart aleck ass, I used to say this, and DeVette, I know you'll probably appreciate this. I used to always say, and pay your taxes. Congress going to get their money. So you got to stay black and die and pay your taxes. We actually got a caller that want to jump in. So, DeVette, you want to give a quick response to that, or should I go to the caller? It's up to you, Corey.
I just wanted to say that we probably need to start looking at, this is a mindset shift. I need us to start buying life insurance policies on our kids when they're born. 2 weeks old is the earliest you can buy a life insurance policy. And I think it needs to be a whole life policy, right? Because I have two whole life policies on my two three-year-old granddaughters, and they both, that's $50,000 apiece, and it costs me $33 a month. That policy will stay two $16 policies, which is $33 a month, is going to stay the premium forever for the rest of their lives. Exactly. I need us to go back and do the math on that. Where do you spend $33? We spend $33 at Applebee's. We spend $33 on just getting a polish change. We spend $33 on a car wash. Why are we not putting that into what will, for me and my family, end up being $100,000 of generational wealth for my grandchildren's grandchildren? Not me. I don't want to see that money. So I definitely love the idea of being able to put life insurance on our children before their insurability changes, because I did have a 16-year-old child who is now considered uninsurable. So I have to encourage people to start getting on the babies while they're immediately born, so that way they will know that they're going to have something that's going to be in effect for the rest of their lives. And, yes, I also have a term life insurance policy, too. Hell.
Oh, yeah, it's different. It's definitely different ways to play with it. I love you putting that idea out there, because I am such an advocate of reminding people, of telling people, yes, get this insurance on these babies. It works the same as it does for adults, but it's the cheapest it's ever going to be. It's so simple, and I hope somebody just got that seed that you just dropped. We're actually up a
Welcome back to the Best of Mental Dialogue 2023. Special guest, attorney Edward C. Hopkins, holding me down, getting his reaction to some of our best cuts of the year. I love that cut. I literally was in the barbershop. I got a young barber that keeps me sharp. We got an exclusive Re-education of the Negro private session exclusive party later today. So I'm going to walk up in that thing sharp. But I literally was breaking down this concept of him saying, hey, you got some babies. Go ahead and get that insurance on them. And that was in lieu of knowing that this cut would be played today. We always give people that game, whether they're part of the club or not. We actually need your support. So consider going to mentaldialogue.com and keeping Intelligent Radio on the air. But we're going to do the work. I'm going to do the work regardless of whether there's a club or not. I got to give our people the seeds they need to progress themselves. So if you will, Brother Ed, any thoughts to what you just heard? I'm pretty sure that's game that you completely understand, but I definitely want to hear your 3 cents and perspectives on that cut from who taught you how to be broke.
Yeah, it is definitely a game I understand. And growing up in one of those communities where there wasn't a lot of financial literacy, there was a lot of poverty, a lot of people struggling, not unnecessarily. And then getting the education, getting the mentors, learning how to handle money, how to invest for the long term. I can tell you, man, that transformation really did contribute greatly to my quality of life. I consider everybody out there who is doing work, increasing the financial literacy of the African-American household in America, they're doing civil rights work, in my opinion. And the reason why is because the aim of civil rights is to get us all to a place where we have good reasons to believe in the United States that we're being treated no differently than anybody else who is going to be equally talented, equally industrious. Part of that is treating ourselves well.
Yes.
And when you have to think through, when you have to think through taking care of a family, taking care of yourself, to me, it is not about getting rich. It's about consideration. Consideration. You know you have progeny. You know you have a bloodline. Sometimes, many times, we have parents, people in the generation before us that we need to look out for financially. It's just consideration. If there are ways to make being black in America a little bit easier for the people we love, why wouldn't we take advantage of it? Insurance is one of the most effective tools to build intergenerational wealth. It might be the most effective tool per dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that we have so many generations of families who just didn't get the message. So everybody who is out there, you know, trying to teach African-American families, and I welcome it. I think it's important because you don't know who you're talking to or what level of literacy they're at. Everybody who's doing that, they're improving circumstances for African-Americans in the United States. One last thought. When she talked about thinking about your grandchildren or your children when they're born, I think that that is the right way to look at it. You are doing, when you are investing in these insurance policies, is you are increasing the likelihood that whoever it is that you're purchasing them for is going to be able to live the kind of life they want to live. One of the scenarios that she was hinting at is that sometimes when you have a policy for a youngster, and that youngster develops some type of condition or a disease or a disability that an insurance company adjuster is going to consider to be very expensive to care for a lifetime, they will not be inclined to give them the same kind of deal on an insurance policy after they learn about that condition.
Mm-hmm.
But when a child is just freshly born, no one knows what types of long-term conditions they're going to develop, and you are going to put them in a situation that no matter what happens to them, they're going to have some wealth to pass on. That's such, it's such a simple idea, but I can tell you that American families that have built a lot of wealth over time, they've been taking advantage of it. One final thing. Going to law school for me was eye-opening in a lot of ways, more so in constitutional law than anything else. That's where I really learned what America is. But the estates and trust courses where they teach you how families hold on to that money through generations, I can tell you what, if all black households knew what the typical law student learns. And in a state's trust state planning course in law school, I can tell you what, the quality of life for the African-American household would increase 50% in a single generation. There's simple ways to take care of your money responsibly, but at the end of the day, I think it's just being mindful of the need for money and showing some consideration to the people you love and using the simple tools that are available to everyone to take care of them for the long term. I think that conversation, we can't talk about it too much, so I'm glad you had that one too.
No, absolutely. We go even further with the inside of the community club, and this is actually open to the public because we have people sponsors our Making Money Matter Mondays, which is a free Zoom. The first voice you heard on that cut was Ashley Thomas. She's one of my Queen of Intellect. And if you're a first-time listener, my Queen of Intellects are just queens inside of the community club that I bring on the show to help me co-host from time to time. The sister I had today, she had to do ballet lessons with her daughter, and we are always here for the kids and for the children and for the progeny, as Brother Ed says, and we're very much talking about our children and the next generation from that perspective. It's a perspective that quite often we do need to gain, so I love the fact that you use that term. But I'm highlighting that Ashley is a financial coach, and she's the step right before a financial advisor. Most people know of financial advisors, but just having your basics in place can really set the advisor up to take you further. Quite often the financial advisor, because of a lack of literacy, quite often, is having to kind of recover things before you can really take advantage of what you may want to go to the advisor for. You may have something in your mind like, I want to start investing, or I might want to start this or whatever, and the financial advisor wants your business, so they're going to talk like you need them. They're going to talk like you need to hear in order to gain your business. But they also know with their knowledge base, if you have some foundational stuff in place, a budget, insurance, all these things that are cornerstone, disability insurance specifically. I won't bore y'all with the details of that on this show, but join us every second Monday and you can get that type of details with Ashley, our finance coach. Making Money Matter specifically is where money and mental health meet. So we also have a psychotherapist, Dr. Katrina Pittman, on that show as well, because quite often a lot of things that are happening with us mentally or daily habits are affecting our money. For example, if you tend to be an overeater when you're stressing at the end of your month, your typical $200 you spend eating out for the month can easily be $400. And if you have that same issue for 3 months, that you've lost the extra $200 every month and don't know where it went because you were stressing and didn't connect your mental health to your finances. So that's what we do every second Monday of the month. Again, dialogue and connect. We're not here just to talk. We are here to progress you along. So I love, Ed, when you highlighted that you consider teaching financial literacy is, in a sense, our civil rights and being good to ourselves. That's something that we find very important as a part of this club as well. And definitely wanted to highlight, if you out there and you got children or babies, go ahead and get their insurance on them now. It's so cheap while they're young and healthy. Take advantage of it. And just like the vet said, go ahead and get the whole life. A lot of times as we become adults and we start getting life insurance later, we have to take the turn based on our financial situation. It's cheap on the babies. Go ahead and get the whole life so they can have something for life. Build something that they can use later in life, or once they get older, you can have them take over the policy. It's cheap as hell. So just wanted to really highlight taking advantage of, as Ed said, the easy tool, if you will, the easy tools you can take advantage of to gain wealth. And just as a highlight before we go into the next cut, I'm literally working with attorney William Hunter here in Atlanta. Been vetting the brother for a year. He knows this. He's about to become a member of our club, and we're going to start having free estate consultations for all our members. So even if you're not in Atlanta, we got you. We are a nationwide virtual neighborhood. So hopefully that starts this month, no later than next month, where we start adding free consultations. Our members already have an option for a free financial session with Ashley, who I'm just talking about, or even a free mental health consultation with Dr. Pittman. That comes with membership. Go to mentaldialogue.com to find out what comes with membership. But we are looking to add a free estate planning consultation
so that you can get exposed to the tools that Brother Ed was just highlighting that he learned in law school when it came to his estate classes, that if we all knew, and I love what he said, he is absolutely right. If you got to be in the game anyway, if you learn how to play, we can literally elevate and close some of that gap. We still owe our reparations. I'm still on that keep. Trust me, trust and believe I'm on that keep. But in the meantime, the thing about the rules of the money game, it don't matter what color you are. If you learn those rules, you can increase your quality of life. And so we try to make sure our members at least have access to the basic things that can set them up to be okay, whether the reparations ever come or not. Let's go to our next cut. And this comes from our second top show of the year. Do men still want to be husbands? Let's play this cut. I see you callers out there. I saw another caller that tried to jump in. The caller that, there you go. All right, I see you. Let me get this caller before we play this cut because they might want to respond before the cut. Area code 44, last three, 237. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning. This is Angela. I'm in Atlanta. It's great to hear the top seven of the shows this year. So appreciate what you're doing in the community, Montoya.
Thank you, Queen. What you got for us? Anything you want to drop, or you just wanted to say thank you? And I definitely appreciate that as well. Go ahead, Queen.
I just wanted to say thank you today. I'm enjoying the shows, listening, going back and listening to the things you've had in the past. So just wanted to get some love.
I love it. Appreciate you, Queen. I'll see you later. This is one of my Black Level members. Can't wait to see you at the exclusive party tonight. So thank you for calling in, Queen.
Absolutely.
All right, with that said, let's go to this next cut. Do men still want to be husbands? It's our second most listened to show of 2023. We'll be right back. We had Brother Donald Atchison call in and give up some of his various backgrounds, but in other cultures where there are rites of passages, to his point, you're not a man until declared. And in this Western culture where you didn't, in a sense, and obviously our African or Black American experience, in a sense, you didn't, in a lot of cases, not see the revitalization of the rites of passages for our culture as we, in a sense, strangers to this land, made this our own land. Some of those rituals didn't stay with us, but something that is understood in a lot of cultures around the world, even without rites of passages, for the most part, manhood included, taking on the responsibility of a wife and raising children. And so even without a rites of passage, that's how, in a sense, you're seen in society. I'm willing to admit that and highlight that that is still something that is very necessary and understood even in westernized culture, even though marriage has gotten, in a sense, a bad name in some sense. But the reality is, it is still honored and respected in that way, and it is, in a sense, a step into manhood for us as men, even if you were never told. And so I always say, as a child born of the hip-hop generation, we are the hip-hop generation. For people my age, I highlight, you know, due to previous dysfunctions within our community specifically, we are that generation, in a sense, the first fatherless generation. A lot of us grew up without our dads in the home, kind of the first generation to have the majority of that, the majority of us grow up that way. It's been happening for years, but we were the generation in which it became over 50% of us or, you know, being born in homes there where the parents were not married or whatever. And so as that first fatherless generation, we've tried to have to figure a lot of these things out on our own. You heard the cut earlier about dating, learning how to, in a sense, be divorced, not understanding commitment, and you don't learn that from dating. In the past, they used to, if you will, court, not simply date. So there are aspects in the culture, again, that don't line us up with this idea of marriage for those who want to be husband. Again, if you don't want to be a husband, this conversation ain't for you. But for plenty of men that want to or desire, understanding what it actually entails, I think our generation owes it to the upcoming generation, and both these young men, I think, are in their 30s, so hopefully this is a chance to do that. But I think we owe it to the next generation to say, hey, here's what we didn't figure out. Here's what we got wrong.
we end up rationalizing even our own dysfunction to the point where we are letting the next generation do what they want. Foundations, in my opinion, that we can return to and lay those seeds again, and we can listen to a Donald Ashton and say, hey, here's how I done it. And maybe we can, in a sense, learn from his example, because what he said sounded incredibly powerful compared to what we're witnessing daily, and especially online. Because I will say offline, there are plenty of beautiful families still getting it right, and that's actually still the majority of the culture, believe it or not, but that is at risk as this dysfunctional aspect of the culture continue to grow. So I said a lot. Welcome back to the Best of Mr. Dialogue 2023. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with Attorney Edward C. Hopkins, our special guest, just reacting to our best cuts. Again, that's from Do Men Still Want to Be Husbands? Ed, I'll let you jump right in. Anything you want to point out that you heard from that cut or anything that stands out to you? Oh, sorry, brother. Let me bring you back live. All right, 1 second. Sorry about that. All right, brother, I got you. You are live on the air right now. Go ahead, brother. Sorry.
Yeah, this is something that my wife and I talk about often. The role that a man plays for a family is so important that those men who don't fully appreciate the role because it wasn't modeled for them, or because they're dealing with some issues inside their minds, or because they desire more than anything else to prove to everyone else that they are the most masculine, the most desired, the one who can conquer the most women. That is, to me, a shortcoming of an intellect's development. And the problem, though, is that you can't really help people understand how important it is to play that role excellently by condemning how poorly they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I am a big proponent of working with men who have decided not to be in the household where their children are being raised and helping them understand why they chose that. All of them would agree that they would want for their children a two-parent household.
Mm-hmm.
But so many of them choose not to give that gift to their children. Now, I know it gets complicated. I do. But at the same time, it's difficult at times to persuasively argue that you love your children more than anything in the world, but not enough to give them a two-parent household. Now, when those types of issues are discussed, they get touchy fast because it's such a prevalent issue in not just the African-American community, but other communities. It hurts our community more because we have a lot of things to get done in order to make this place a little bit better for the future than it is for the past. We have some gaps to close, and it's easier to close those gaps when you have family units working at it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think of the brothers who make the decision that they're going to have children, but they're not going to raise them with the mothers they have them with, and when brothers make the decision that they're going to have children with multiple women, if I catch them early enough, I try to help them understand themselves, and I have serious, deep conversations with them about why they desire to have sex with so many different women and why they don't desire to focus a lifetime on one. When you explore your own mind and you figure out why you want to have a lot of female partners and a lot of children with different women, you oftentimes will learn the real source of that desire. It's oftentimes stuff that happened to you as a child. It's things that you thought about, things that made you what you felt about as a child. But I can tell you, man, that I haven't met a man yet who told me that he wanted for his children a single mother household. I haven't met one. And we need to start thinking about that in advance more often than not. But again, it's difficult to have this conversation without coming across as if you're condemning the brothers who have a lot of children with a bunch of different women or condemning the women. And I don't want to do that. I just want us to think more about those children. We tell each other that we love them more than anything else. We all agree, almost all of us agree, that we would prefer for them to have a two-parent household, but we don't do the work with ourselves to give that to them. And that, to me, is a big issue in our community. It's going to be a big issue for a while, but we need to keep talking about it, being open about it, being honest and vulnerable about it, and working on it a little bit by little every generation until we get to the point where we have stronger households that are led by two parents instead of one.
Absolutely. The messaging is how it happens. The messaging is how it eroded. So if there is a decent agreement amongst most of us, and I think there is, that we want more of our children to come from two-parent homes. It's not a real argument when you just lay it out in general. And so if that is a reality, then we also must understand that it starts with messaging to basically build it back. And so to Ed's point, having a real conversation, it has to be understood that having the real conversation about what we need to do should not be received as an indictment on what you have or have not done up until this point. Well, let's come to agreement on the conversation and the benefits of doing that. Because to Ed's point, I'm guilty of it. Quite often, the cycle creates this situation where we learn our manhood in the street from other boys who are 3 to 4 years older than us, who don't know shit about being men. And manhood is not automatically, it is taught from father to son around the world the same way always has been. And we're in a cycle where it's not being taught that way. So it becomes difficult. We do have to figure it out on our own. And if everything I'm saying is true, there's nothing wrong with saying we don't want our children brought up in these homes. What people jump to when you start having that conversation is people start thinking of the abusive and dysfunctional situations they know, and they're asking, are you saying people should stay even though they're completely dysfunctional? No, that's not what we're saying. What we're saying is let's plant the seeds. Like I said in that cut, this generation, we came up, we've tried it out this way. Let's be honest about the reality of what's happened to our community. And in that reality, let's plant better seeds verbally to the next generation. Even a child, you grew up this way. Wouldn't you want your children to have this or that? And you say, the best way to do that, even if I'm not example, that's what my mother did for me as a single mother. She absolutely never wanted me to become a single father and relayed that, did not want me to repeat her cycle, and I'm thankful for her for it. But yeah, we can say to the next generation, don't you want your children to have it this way? A child can understand that. We can start the messaging. The messaging of two-parent homes can no longer be received as an indictment of what has already happened or taking it personal. That's what I was talking about in that cut. We rationalize our behavior and like, well, that's kind of how it was for us, and don't correct the next generation. We could have made the mistake ourselves. Because you made the mistake, and I'm not saying every situation is a mistake, again, don't be that sensitive, but hey, I did it this way. Hey, young boy, hey, young girl, let me teach you a better way to do it. I always tell people, the drunk could tell you not to drink too much, and they're right. But you could go,
I like that.
Look at you. You a drunk. They right. Go ahead, brother. Jump in on that before we go to the next cut. Any thoughts?
I think that's a great way to put it. I don't want to have anybody who's listening now or later believe that there's something wrong with them, something wrong with the family structure that they have. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm telling, just like you said, yeah, I'm sitting here saying, look, we are in agreement that we want these two-parent households for our children. We're in agreement. Let's work on what is it that's causing us to put so many of our babies in situations where they don't get that. And when we are out here talking about how much we care about our people, out here talking about how pro-black we are, if you're talking about reparations, to me, reparations starts with supporting Black businesses, supporting Black families, and supporting
charity
your
starts
children.
At home.
Because
Marcus Garvey, baby.
That's
Marcus
right.
Garvey, charity starts at home.
It's difficult to make a persuasive argument to an intelligent person that you are pro-reparations if you are not doing the things to enhance the quality of life for Black Americans that you can do as an individual. And thinking about how you are going to be when you become a father, thinking about what that's going to require of you years before you make the decision to
yes.
do that is one of the most important things that you can do as a man or as a woman and be Black in America. Just the forethought is what I'm trying to argue that we need to focus more on. And
no,
I think that those who are honest enough and tell people what they really think about how their decisions have affected their children if they don't have two-parent homes, you're going to get plenty of stories of heroic women, mostly heroic women, also some heroic men, who have done the job of two by themselves. But you also should compare and contrast that with two good people figuring out how to stick together for decades for themselves and for their children. And you can see the beauty in that too. And of the two lifestyles, most of us are going to agree that the two-parent household is what we want for our children, and we just need to work more on helping one another raise children who understand why it's so valuable and teaching them how to know themselves well enough to start families that are going to stick together.
No, absolutely. I always tell people, I'll say this real quick and we'll go to this cut from our number one show. The dialogue is so sensitive because of our own unfortunate cycle and reality. It's so sensitive that what people tend to do, and I like to put this out here for people to just think about it, is we make apple to oranges comparisons when it comes to this conversation. You know, because we do have, in a sense, the majority of our homes, in a sense, coming up this way, and people are taking that, saying that as some type of an indictment. And so what we do is we make apples to oranges comparisons. And so to your point, we jump to and highlight my mother is a single mother, is a hero. She's one of those examples. You know, at least according to our community, they always like, oh, you've done such a great job with, you know, they call me Lamar where I'm from, or whatever. You've done such a great job with your child, or whatever, and she did. She is my hero, absolutely. But what we quite often do is we make an apples to oranges comparison. We basically highlight the heroes and compare them to the bad marriages. To Ed's point, an apple to apple comparison is put that, my mother alone, up against a two-parent home that literally was able to provide the feminine and the masculine and the resources for their children. When you do apples to apples comparison, there is no comparison. But if you automatically get sensitive to this conversation and think of all the bad marriages that you know and think of the great single parent situations, that's not an apple to apple comparison. And again, it's not to try, again, my mother is my world. I have nothing, but we've done a show on how can we help single mothers and brought therapists on. So we are about our people to that degree. There's nothing I'm saying that is putting down, nor would I put down single parents, mother or fathers. I'm not doing that. But speaking to the truth to the next generation, we owe it as the hip-hop generation who came up. If we're honest about, have we gotten this right? What does our community look like? If we're honest, we should be able to tell the babies, hey, let me show you how to do it a little bit better, even with our hero examples. We should be able to do that. So we're going to go to our final cut. It is from our top show of the year. Again, I brought Brother Ed back. He was on our top show of the year. For those who do know, I dropped a book this year called Re-Education of the Negro, Necessary Conversations on Race, Sex, and Culture. I always do the show. I go by Black Socrates. I consider myself a philosopher. And with that said, I dropped a show that does what we're doing on the show today. I dropped a book, I'm sorry, that creates dialogues at home. We're going to be doing that today for those in Atlanta, for some of our members, an exclusive party called Re-Education of the Negro Private Sessions, where we go deeper into the show. Deeper into the book. And so for that show, I had Brother Ed come on and Brother Emil Bryant come on, and we did dialogues from my book to show people how to use the book. So this is just a cut from that show, and we had a literally drop the mic moment on the show, and I'll let y'all hear it here.
back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning, special edition show, commentaries from my book, Reeducation of the Negro, Necessary Conversations on Race, Sex, and Culture, out on Amazon.com. So definitely check that out. My special guest, a couple of my brothers, was fortunate enough to get to meet in college, and we've been longtime friends ever since, but again, they are two of the smartest brothers I know, Brother Emil Bryan, as well as Attorney Edward Hopkins, or Ed as we officially call him. And so I'm going through the commentaries. I'm going to share another one. This one is called Black Socrates Speaks, Revolutionary Capitalist. This was written back in 2017. This system can and will kill you. If so, I plan to die standing on my own two feet. I'm strapping my mind first and my hips second. This is far from just gun talk, but instead using the same system that uses me to my own advantage. Lose the fallacy of leaving one system for another. Relocate by all means. I might. But that will still require you to navigate a man-made system of commerce, exchange of goods, services, and or money. Therefore, no matter the system, master it, not only to get money, but to leave a legacy for future generations. This approach does not guarantee life, but succeed and you will live and die standing up. Revolutionary Capitalist, hashtag just my 3 cents. All I ask is that you think. Ed, I would love to hear your reactions to that piece.
Brother, all I can say is something that a wiser man said many years ago, Claude McKay, if we must die, let it not be like hogs, hunted and penned in an inglorious spot, while round us bark the mad and hungry dogs, making their mock at our cursed lot. If we must die, oh, let us nobly die, so that our precious blood may not be shed in vain, that even the monsters we defy shall be constrained to honor us though dead. Oh, kinsmen, we must meet the common foe, though far outnumbered, let us show us brave, and for their 1,000 blows, deal one death blow. What thou before us lies, the open grave? Like men, we'll face the murderous cowardly pack, pressed to the wall, dying, but fighting back. He said it better than I could, brother.
Oh, my God. Hey, can I shut the show off early? Can we just drop the mic right there? Show off. Emil, your thoughts. Oh, that amazing
Ed, quote. You want me to follow that, right? No, I'm not. I'm not going to follow that. My brother just went ahead and dropped a nuclear stanza from the great Claude McKay. No, thank you, sir.
Welcome back to the Best of Mental Dialogue 2023, as you heard. A pinnacle, a crescendo moment on the top show of the year. It was our top show by far, so I'm so glad to have you back, Brother Ed. Lily, you pulled Claude McKay out your head live on the spot without any preparation, man. That was amazing. It's worthy of dropping the mic and stopping the show now. Once again, hearing it all over, it gives me chills just to hear that a piece I wrote in my book spark you to highlight the journey of, I would say, African-Americans, as we keep saying, this is the conversation, this is the community that we're talking directly to, wanting to drop seeds that they can use and progress themselves, want to dialogue and connect to others. I feel like that quote from you epitomized, you know, one of the commentaries out of the book. If you haven't gotten the book, Reeducation of the Negro, it's short commentaries to have dialogues like you're hearing today. What does it make you think? I don't want you to read the book to whether you agree with my thoughts. I wrote the book intentionally to make you talk. It's not simply my thoughts. I wrote it with the intentions of how can I say something, how can I write something to make people talk about the necessary conversations on race, sex, and culture, the subtitle of the book. Your thoughts to hearing you quote Claude McKay in reference to my book, and I appreciate you on that show, and I appreciate you today again, brother. Your thoughts, King. Let me bring you back live again. Sorry. All right, there you go. You're live again. Go ahead.
Listening to it is interesting. Listening to yourself recite a poem that means a lot to you, that one of the poems you've memorized, that
that had an emotional, it made me feel something to hear myself say that. Before I tell you what I think about it, though, let me just tell you something, man. I studied philosophy for years, brother. I nearly got a PhD in the field before I decided to go to law school. You shouldn't consider yourself to be a philosopher. You are a philosopher. You are doing a philosopher's work. You are thinking through the tough problems that we all have to face in life. You are helping the rest of us figure out how to think them through as well. And you do it excellently. So, brother, you don't have to be a published scholar to be a philosopher. Indeed, most philosophers aren't. But you are a philosopher, brother, and we're all grateful that you are doing what you do. When it comes to Claude McKay, I can tell you that the reason why I was able to recite that from memory without having to really work hard is because I grew up listening to rap music before I really took my self-education seriously. Before I really started reading for me, not for schools, but for my own mind, my own mental fitness. And at this point, having read thousands of books, I know what the good stuff is. I have read through the Western canon. I have a complete Kingly, and I am invested in a home library. The reason why it's so easy for me to say that poem by our brother Claude McKay is because it moved me so much when I read it. I had to memorize it. And there are dozens of poems like that that have moved me to tears when I read them. When I imagine what the men and women who wrote them were going through when they wrote them, and they still wrote those poems for us.
Yes.
I figure sometimes if they move you like that, the very least you can do is memorize it and keep it with you and carry it with you. And so I can spout off a bunch of poems, and that's just one of them because it moved me so much. That particular one, though, when we were talking about the condition of being black and in the United States, we are constantly, constantly in a struggle. And it's more than just a notion. We live in a nation that even its lawmakers in the 19th and 18th century admitted was not designed for us. If you look at the debates of the members of Congress after the Civil War, they repeated, this was not made for the black for Africans. This was made for white men and white women. That's the nation in which we live. Now, we are working along with our other brothers and sisters on trying to transform it into what it ought to be. But you need never forget that it was supposed to be when it got started. It wasn't supposed to be a place for us. And so when you think about Claude McKay, what he is touching on is this is a man who is well-educated. He has put in the work to develop a powerful mind. He has not allowed his society to tell him how strong his mind should be. He has built it. And because he built it, he could write a poem like that, inspire a man who he never met, who came generations after him to memorize every word. So part of being black, I believe, in the United States is understanding your circumstances. And then part of being a human is understanding that despite your circumstances, if you fight for it, if you fight for your own mind, if you fight for your own body, like our good brother Frederick Douglass encouraged us to do in all three of his autobiographies, if you are willing to fight for it, you can become the very best version of yourself, even in America. But you have to fight for it. And you have to fight for it first, I believe, with your intellect. And Claude McKay fought for it with his intellect. He gave us the gift of If We Must Die. It's a poem that is very near and dear to me, and I'm happy. I'm happy you said something that inspired me to utter it because I hope that people who are listening to this will be encouraged to build their minds the way Claude McKay built his and the way Frederick Douglass encouraged us to build our minds. One last thing. A lot of folks ask me why I read so much, why I have read thousands of books when you come to my home, why I have all these books in my home library. It's not normal. It's abnormal for the average American, but you don't see the type of book collection that I have in the typical American home. You certainly don't see it in the typical African-American home. But what inspired me to become a reader, someone who has plowed through 2,000 books in 20 years, is Frederick Douglass wrote his first autobiography when he was a younger man. In chapter 6, paragraph 3, he wrote about his experience learning to read. Mm-hmm. And that paragraph was so moving for me. It made me feel that if I didn't take control over my own mind, that I would be responsible for all that ailed me in my life. And Frederick Douglass reached out to me from centuries ago because he educated himself, taught himself how to read, became the most recognized American in the world, the most photographed man of the 19th century, the most photographed American of the 19th century, more so than the presidents.
Yes.
The most famous American in the world. And what he did is he showed the world that all that narrative about what the African could be and could not be was a lie. He showed the world that with the very sparsest amount of resources, that if you commit to your own mind, that you can build a masterful mind without assistance from people who tend or want to oppress you. And his example and that paragraph and that first autobiography moved me to tears. That was the moment that transformed me into a lifelong reader. So I encourage everybody who took some pleasure in hearing a brother recite Claude McKay's poems from memory, I encourage them to read Frederick Douglass's first autobiography. Just try to get through chapter 7. If you get through chapter 7, it's going to change your life. But more importantly, chapter 6, paragraph 3. If you read that, read it twice. Read it twice. And if it doesn't move you, come back to it when you are a little wiser. Because that paragraph made me read. It made me stop watching television. It made me read and write. And it was because of Frederick Douglass's heroic effort to save his own mind as well as his body.
Man, this is the most amazing way to end the show. I didn't know it would end this way, but I'm literally looking at the books I like to showcase. I got boxes of books. I don't have it in the library. I live in an apartment, but I do have my favorite books showcased as soon as you walk into my apartment. And the book in is that very book that you're speaking to. And I'll tell you, Ed, and I didn't know we had this connection, but that same paragraph you're talking about is how I realize I will forever owe, and I'll live my life knowing I can never pay the debt that our ancestors made for us. And it's that very same paragraph, along with my hero, Malcolm X, that I do this work. Thank you, brother. This has been an amazing show. I can't even thank you enough right now. I'm moved emotionally just to hear that that was the moment that you became, in a sense, the Ed that I became to know, the smartest brother that I know, with the insatiable. I'm like, I read a lot, but this brother, damn, that's who you were for me. And thank you for holding me down on the best of Mental Dialogue 2023. Can't wait to work with you more in the future. Appreciate you, King. Till next time. Thank y'all.
Thank you for having me on the show, man.
I love you. And thank y'all all, Intellectual Outcasts, for a wonderful 2023. Share these shows. Let people know we're doing the dialogue and connect the real work over here to help our people progress. All I ask is that you think. See y'all next Saturday.